a way out of some misguided idea that you're doing what's best for him.
I didn't get a chance to finish my thought. The door to the library opened, and Aiden entered, followed by Gage. They each took one of the armchairs opposite the couch and sat. Aiden glanced to Gage, who spoke first.
Armstrong's story checks out. Cooper's been looking into him, and he's got a contact with the marshals. Armstrong walked away from protective custody, and they've cut him loose. No one knows exactly what he's been doing for the last 6 months. Aiden talked to Stephanie Marks. She handled his divorce, and he said she's the best. She's on her way here. She'll get started, including what you need to file for a restraining order.
Aiden leaned forward and said,
"We need you to stick to the house until we have a better idea what Armstrong is up to. I know you two enjoy getting out and taking walks, but I need you to put a hold on that just for a while."
I nodded, not sure what to say. The practical part of my brain kicked in. Amelia has a doctor appointment tomorrow. I need to drive her.
"I'll take care of it," Aiden said. "Mrs. W. can bring her if I can't."
I looked at Amelia to see how she was handling the idea of a doctor appointment, escorted by Mrs. W. But, oddly, she looked unperturbed. They seemed to have forged a fragile peace over their meddling. Mrs. W. had been sternly disapproving of the fight in the dining room, but just as firmly in support of the note that had started it.
"How long does it take to get a divorce?"
I asked, looking between Gage and Aiden. Gage looked to Aiden and he shook his head.
"It depends. If both spouses agree, then it's fast."
"I don't think he'll agree," I said darkly. Aiden gave a sober nod.
"He did not like my sending him away. Stephanie is very good, but you may have to be prepared to ride this out. If he refuses the divorce, you'll have to go to court, and that takes time. I'll use what influence I have to speed it up, but..."
"I don't expect you to."
"Sophie, your family. We have the power to make this easier for you, and we're going to use it. Don't argue."
"I'm not family," I protested.
"Aiden, Amelia, I need a minute alone with Sophie,"
Gage said, his eyes locked on mine, as serious as I'd ever seen them. I found it impossible to look away. I heard the others leave, closing the door behind them.
"I'm married,"
I whispered, feeling tears prick the back of my eyes again. "I didn't want to be married. I wanted to be free. I'd thought I was coming to Gage, free."
"I don't care," Gage said. "I love you. That's all I care about. That's all that matters."
"Okay," I said. "Okay."
Gage stood and crossed to me, leaning over and scooping me off the couch. He sat, settling me into his chest and kissed the top of my head.
"Don't take off on me,"
he said in a low voice.
"I know you're scared to death, and I know this is messing with your head. It's messing with mine, too. Just knowing that guy is alive and breathing after what he did to you, Angel, it's taking everything I have not to hunt him down and tear him apart."
I tried to sit up, pulling against his arms.
"Gage, you can't do anything like that. You can't..."
"I know. I know because I want to spend the rest of my life with you, not rotting in jail for murder. So I'm ignoring my instincts. We're going to do this the right way. We're going to get you free of him. We're going to figure this out step by step. We can handle it, as long as we stay together, okay?"
I relaxed, pressing my forehead into his neck and absorbing the heat of his body against mine. I took his hand and played with his fingers, the simple intimacy grounding me.
"I love you," I said. "I'm sorry I freaked out. I saw him, and it was like a nightmare, but I was awake, and I just lost it."
"I know, Angel. I know."
"I'm scared," I admitted. "I could put it behind me when I thought he was dead, but knowing he's still out there..."
"He's not going to get to you,"
Gage promised. I knew he meant it, but I couldn't help my fear. Anthony's ghost had haunted my dreams, kept me from sleeping in the 2 years since his death. The sudden knowledge that he was alive, that the ghost was real, it was too much. "He came back for me. He's not going to let me go."
"He can't have you,"
Gage said. You belong with me.
We sat there on the couch until the divorce lawyer arrived, not really talking, just being there, together. Gage stayed while I talked to Stephanie Marks, holding my hand the entire time. She was brusque and efficient, but the fire in her eyes when I explained my situation was comforting. I tried to ask Gage about her fee, and he pressed a finger across my lips. No. But he shook his head and pressed his finger harder.
No, Sophie. I promise I won't hunt down your soon-to-be ex-husband and kill him in cold blood. In return, you agree to let me take care of your attorney's fees.
When he put it like that, I did the only sensible thing and nodded my head. Chapter 32. Sophie. The next 24 hours were anticlimactic. I was on the edge of my seat waiting for my phone to ring, for a knock at the door, but there was nothing. Anthony had disappeared as mysteriously as he'd appeared back in my life. Stephanie Marks filed the paperwork for the restraining order, and it was granted almost immediately. I suspected Aiden's influence. She'd explained that the paperwork itself was as good as useless, but if he violated the order, it would only help my case in the divorce. Useless or not, the restraining order made me feel better. Mrs. W. drove Amelia to her appointment, since Aiden and Gage had a meeting at the office they couldn't easily reschedule. Gage didn't want to leave me alone in the house, but I reassured him that I'd be fine. The guard at the gate had strict instructions not to allow anyone on the property until they returned. There was another guard on the property, and the alarm was set. I was safe in the house, and I was going to be brave. That included not asking Gage to sit by my side. Anthony was alive. I was going to have to learn to deal with that. The house was quiet with everyone gone. I tried to read a book but couldn't keep my attention on the page. Finally, I gave up and curled up on the couch in the library in front of the fire, listening to the hiss of the gas logs and watching the dancing flames. My phone rang, discordantly loud in the quiet room. I glanced at the screen before I answered and froze. Unknown number. My thumb hovered over the red call button, debating what to do as it rang in my hand over and over. My heart trying to pound its way out of my chest, I punched my thumb at the button and hoped for the best. Hello?
Sophie.
Anthony's familiar cool tone sounded in my ear.
You were so unfriendly yesterday. I almost didn't recognize my own wife.
I have a restraining order, I said, surprised at how calm I sounded. My breath was strangled in my chest, but my voice was level when I said, You're not allowed to come near me or call me, or contact me in any way.
You're my wife, Anthony said unruffled. No one can tell me I can't call my own wife. Now, I've got a problem, and I think you can help me with it. I have an unwanted guest. I'd like to trade her for you.
A cold ball of horror gathered in my chest as I heard Amelia's voice echo in the background over the phone.
Don't listen to him, Sophie. Stay where you are and don't listen to him. Don't you dare.
The smack of flesh on flesh sounded over the phone, and Amelia fell silent. I knew that sound. Knew it too well. I squeezed my eyes shut, trying to think. Anthony said,
I don't have any interest in harming the old woman, but I will, if I have to. You have an hour. I'll text you the address. Don't be late, or I'll slit her throat.
He hung up. A few seconds later, my phone chirped with a text message, an address I didn't recognize. I sat staring at my phone, frozen in indecision. Panic told me to run for the car keys and go after Amelia. Every muscle in my body strained to leap off the couch and move, but I stayed where I was. If I showed up there by myself, not only would Anthony get me, he would almost certainly kill Amelia. If I did nothing, he would kill Amelia. I was reaching for my phone when it rang, startling me so badly, I almost fell off the couch. Hello? A familiar voice said,
Sophie? Cooper.
We caught Armstrong's call. I've got a team on the way to that address. We'll get eyes on Amelia. You stay put for now.
He said if I'm not there in an hour, he'll kill her, I said. Are you guys going to get her out?
Uncertain at this point, he said,
his tone businesslike as if he weren't discussing the life and possible death of a woman he'd known since birth.
We're going to get eyes on her and assess the situation. I'm headed in your direction. Gage and Aiden will meet me there. The address isn't far. We have time for a game plan.
All I could say was, hurry. I paced the front hall, the minutes after Cooper's call stretching, distorting, until every heartbeat felt an hour long. The clock was ticking. Anthony had Amelia. He hadn't mentioned Mrs. W. I didn't know where he'd grabbed Amelia. From the car? From the doctor's office? Had he hurt Mrs. W? I didn't know. I didn't know anything. I was walking in circles in the front hall of the house, alone, and I didn't know anything. Anthony had Amelia. Just the thought of it had nausea rolling in my stomach. Amelia. She was my job, my patient. But in the last 6 months, she'd been more a mother to me than anyone since my own had died when I was a teenager. I wouldn't let Anthony hurt her. I could live with a lot of things, but not that. The front door finally opened, and Cooper strode in, his eyes scanning the room.
Aiden and Gage aren't here yet, he said, stating the obvious. They should be right behind me.
He wants to trade me for her, I said. We can't let him hurt her. Cooper gave a brusque nod.
I heard the call. We'll have a report from my team in the next 5 minutes. The address he gave wasn't far.
You have a plan? I asked, crossing my arms over my chest and hugging myself.
I have a few options in mind, he said.
I'd only met Cooper once before, and I'd thought he was all business then, but I saw now I'd been wrong. Cooper was a cipher, his face betraying nothing. If he was worried about Amelia, it didn't show. When I looked at him, all I saw was focus. The door swung open again, and Aiden entered, followed by Gage. I was momentarily struck dumb at the sight of Gage in a suit. I hadn't quite gotten used to it yet. He was handsome enough in a t-shirt and cargo pants, in a custom-tailored gray suit and starched white shirt. He made my heart skip a beat. For the shortest second, I forgot my fear and almost smiled. Then he was at my side, pulling me close and dropping his head to mine. We'll get her back. I swear, Sophie. Cooper's phone rang and he answered it with a quick, report. He stood in the middle of the carpet in the front hall, motionless, his entire being concentrated on the words pouring into his ear. I heard him say,
anything you can do to improve the line of sight?
Then a minute later,
okay. Okay. No, not yet. We don't want to spook him while we still have time. Hold your position.
Cooper hung up the phone and slid it into his pocket.
He's got her in a building that used to be a garage, out by the airport. There are empty lots on either side, wide open in three directions. The two front windows are papered over, no visibility. He's got cameras on the outside so he can't get close enough for a good view through the uncovered windows on the sides. But one of my guys was able to get to a small window in the back without being seen. He verified that Amelia is tied up and gagged, but uninjured.
Did he get eyes on Armstrong?
Gage asked. Cooper shook his head.
Briefly. Armstrong's smart. We can't get a line of sight on him. A few quick glimpses, enough to see that he's armed, but not long enough to get our own shot. We can't take him out unless he moves. With those cameras live, our options are limited.
What about your guy at the back?
Gage asked.
The windows are too small for entry, and anything we could introduce that might disable Armstrong would endanger Amelia.
Then what do we do? I asked. He'd said he had options in mind. I wanted to know what they were. Cooper studied me for a long moment, then turned his dark gaze to Aiden and Gage. I got the feeling he was weighing their mood before he spoke.
I have an idea that might solve all of our problems, he said slowly.
but I don't think you're going to like it.
Gage went still. Aiden narrowed his eyes on Cooper and said,
What is it? We put a vest on Sophie, wire her, and send her in. She draws Armstrong into position, and we shoot him.
Gage exploded. No fucking way. Are you fucking insane? We're not sending Sophie in there. No fucking way, Cooper. Think of something else.
Aiden jumped in with his own protest.
Unacceptable, Cooper. We can't put Sophie at risk.
He has Amelia, I said. He'll kill her. He's not bluffing. Anthony doesn't bluff. He told me he'd slit her throat, and he meant it. We're running out of time.
Sophie. No,
Gage said. I stepped back, pulling myself from his arms and looked him in the eye. I can do this, Gage.
No,
he said again.
I swore to you I would keep you safe from him.
I'll be wearing a bulletproof vest, I said, looking from Gage to Aiden, who was shaking his head.
Gage let out a bitter half-laugh.
You think a vest is going to do you any good when he shoots you in the head? And forget about armor-piercing bullets. A vest is barely safer than nothing at all. No, it's too dangerous, Sophie.
He's not going to shoot me, I said.
You don't know that,
Gage shouted, and I flinched. He wasn't angry at me. He was scared. We were all scared,
and he liked the idea of me walking into a room with an armed madman about as much as I would like it if he offered to do the same.
I took a deep breath and let it out. I do know that, Gage. Anthony had guns when we were married. There was always one nearby. But he never once threatened me with a weapon. If he's going to kill me, he'll do it with his hands, not a bullet.
Sophie. No,
Gage said, his eyes searching my face, anguished and furious. If I can get him to move into the right spot, your guys can shoot him? I asked Cooper.
Yes,
he confirmed, sending a wary look at Gage. Gage let out a frustrated growl and stepped back, his fists clenched at his side. Without another sound, he turned on his heel and stormed out the front door, slamming it so hard it shook in the frame. Aiden looked at us both.
Sophie, I think this is a shit idea. I'm not going to try to stop you, but...
Aiden, we don't have time for this,
Cooper reminded him.
I know. Give me a minute with Gage.
He looked to me, then to Cooper.
Get her suited up. I'll get Gage on board and then we'll go.
He walked out the front door, leaving me alone with Cooper.
For the record,
Cooper said,
I don't like this idea much better than they do. But we need some help to take him down. And if anyone else goes in there, he'll shoot on sight.
I can't let him hurt Amelia, I said. I can live with a lot, but I can't live with that.
Then let's get to work,
he said, scanning me from head to toe. I wore a long-sleeve button-down, jeans, and a pair of white canvas sneakers.
Go change into a sweater, something thick and loose-fitting. Be fast.
I took off down the hall to my room, unbuttoning my shirt as I ran. By the time I got back to the front hall, Aiden and Gage had returned, and Cooper had a long black duffel bag open on the floor. He pulled out a stiff black thing that I guessed was the bulletproof vest, and handed it to Gage.
Get this on her. The wire is already attached.
Without a word, Gage crowded me into the corner of the front hall, shielding my body from view with his bigger frame, and said,
Pull your arms out of your sleeves, and lift up your sweater.
I did as he instructed, and stood still, letting him fasten the vest over my shoulders and around my torso with efficient motions that told me he'd done this more than once. I opened my mouth twice to say something, anything. No words came out. Gage couldn't seem to look at me. When he was done, he tugged my sweater back into place and turned to join the others. I followed, surprised to hear him say,
I'm taking the shot. Gage, I've got a guy in position. I'm taking the shot, Cooper. You're not sending her in there and leaving me sitting in a van 2 blocks away. Fuck that. I'm taking the shot. You don't have a single guy on your team better than me.
You're not a sniper,
Cooper argued.
You don't need a sniper. You need a guy who can take a shot through a window at medium range without endangering hostages,
What the fuck do you think I've been doing for the last 10 years?
Cooper lifted his chin in the direction of the stairs and said,
Change out of that rig and grab what you need. The clock is ticking. Meet us in the car.
Gage flew up the stairs. I barely had my seatbelt on when he came out the front door and slid into the back seat of Cooper's oversized SUV beside Aiden. He'd changed into a muddy green long-sleeved t-shirt, khaki cargo pants, and was carrying a gun. Gage didn't say a word as he buckled his own seatbelt. Cooper had me sitting in the front so he could spend the drive giving me instructions, most of which revolved around not getting myself killed. Aiden and Gage sat in the back seat in silence, the weight of their disapproval pressing on me. My chest ached, worse every time Gage refused to meet my eyes in the rearview mirror. I didn't know if he'd forgive me for this. If I were in his shoes, I'd be furious. I don't know if I'd understand. I'd like to think I would. But the idea of Gage putting himself in danger turned my stomach. I understood why he was angry, why he might not forgive me. But I had to do it. I couldn't let Anthony hurt Amelia any more than he already had. Maybe he would shoot me. It was possible. But I was pretty sure that wasn't his plan. I doubted he'd guess I'd called for help. Anthony would think I'd done as I was told, too scared and too stupid to defy him. I was scared, but I wasn't stupid, and I was done with doing what I was told. Amelia had been right. I'd endured, and I'd waited for a chance. My patience had been rewarded, and I'd gotten that chance when Anthony had played dead. I wasn't giving it up. If Anthony wanted me back badly enough to kidnap Amelia Winters, he wasn't going to stop. This had to end, now. And I wouldn't let it end with Amelia's death, not if I could help it. My hands were shaking, and I felt sick to my stomach, but I knew what I had to do. I looked down at the tablet Cooper had shoved into my hands. On it was a rough sketch of the garage, showing the lines of sight from the windows and Amelia's position. The rear window, where Cooper's guy kept watch on Amelia, was the only one without a camera, probably because the approach was blocked by another building and the window was high on the wall. Anthony must have assumed no one could get up there anyway. Gage would. As I studied the sketch, I saw exactly where I needed to move Anthony so Gage could take his shot. We got there with 13 minutes to spare. Cooper stopped the SUV 2 blocks away, behind a mid-sized tan sedan. A man dressed in black combat gear got out of the sedan and walked to the driver's side door of Cooper's SUV. Cooper rolled down the window and accepted a set of keys, and the man in combat gear jogged off. Cooper handed me the keys and said, "We can't approach from the front. We're going to leave you here. Get in the sedan, count to 100, and drive up 2 blocks. The garage will be on your right, number 1582. I nodded and took the keys, unfastening my seatbelt. I turned to face Gage before I got out. His eyes finally met mine, and their remote expression chilled my aching heart. "I love you," I whispered. He didn't answer. Tears pricked the back of my eyes, and I blinked, forcing them back. This wasn't the time. I could fall apart later. First, I had to save Amelia, and hopefully, myself. Chapter 33. Sophie. I climbed down from Cooper's tall SUV, going through his instructions in my head as I walked calmly to the beige sedan and climbed behind the wheel. I counted slowly, hearing the SUV pull back into the street and drive away. I reached 100 and turned the key, my heart pounding but my hands steady. The engine turned over smoothly, and I drove down the street, exactly as Cooper had said. Number 1582 was on my right, an abandoned garage. The bays closed. The front windows papered over, weeds growing through the cracks in the parking lot. I parked the sedan and left it unlocked, gripping the keys tightly in my hand, knowing I was being watched. I straightened my spine and marched to the front door. It helped, knowing that Cooper's men were somewhere nearby. that Gage might already be in position. A car passed on the street behind me, reminding me that while the area wasn't heavily trafficked, neither was it deserted. Anthony would want me inside the garage. Maybe I could use that to get Amelia out. I knocked on the door. No answer. I pushed the heavy glass door open and propped it with my foot, keeping the other foot outside, squinting into the dimly lit room. With the glass door and front windows papered over, the only light came from the bare bulbs hanging from the ceiling and the small, square window high on the back wall. Amelia sat duct-taped to a folding chair in the center of the room. Anthony stood a few feet behind her, pointing a gun at the back of her head. When she saw me, Amelia's expression shifted from scared to irritated. I was sure that if Anthony hadn't taped her mouth shut, she would have started yelling at me. As far as I could tell, she was unharmed, except for swelling on the side of her cheek. "Come in and shut the door," Anthony commanded. I shook my head. I held up the car keys and tossed them into the parking lot. They landed with a click of metal on pavement and skidded across the cracked surface, the winter sun catching the grooves and flashing in my eyes. I looked at Anthony and said, "Let her go, and I'll come inside."
"You come inside, and I'll let her go."
I couldn't pull off casual. I was too scared. And Anthony could smell fear like a shark could smell blood. I shrugged anyway. Now that I was inside, the layout wasn't exactly like the sketch Cooper's men had sent him, but it was close enough. Amelia was just inside target range, and standing behind her, Anthony was out of sight. If he moved toward me, he'd be right where Gage wanted him.
"I'll let her go when I'm ready," Anthony said. "Step inside and shut that door, or I'll slit her throat right in front of you."
His free hand slipped into the pocket of his dress pants, and he withdrew something long and black. Pressing a button on the side, a blade snicked up, the metal gleaming in the light from the bulb over Anthony's head. I stepped into the garage and let go of the door.
"I don't understand why you're making this so difficult, Sophie,"
he said in his cool, even voice. He stood there in dark dress pants and a tailored shirt, his shoes immaculate, not a hair out of place, and threatened to kill Amelia right in front of me. How had I been unable to see the monster lurking inside his polished exterior? 2 months he'd courted me, and I'd never realized what he was. "You don't understand why I'm making this difficult?" I asked. "Are you serious?" Caution screamed at me to be quiet, not to aggravate him, not to set him off. I didn't have a choice. I needed him to come for me, and following his orders wouldn't do the job.
"Sophie," he said, his voice patient but his eyes hard, "your place is at my side. I need you to come home."
"We don't have a home. I sold it when you died." Anthony waved the knife in dismissal.
"Damien wasn't supposed to let you sell the house. He had some idea he'd take over for me. He wanted you out of the way. And he was too squeamish to kill you."
"What happened to him?" I asked, aware every word we said was being recorded.
"He won't be a problem," Anthony said.
"Did you kill him?" I asked, pushing harder. Anthony smiled, a slow widening of his mouth that telegraphed satisfaction, and said,
"Among other things."
My stomach rolled with nausea. Time to get us back on track. "I'm not coming home with you. I'm filing for divorce." Anthony's eyes narrowed.
"You can't divorce me.
You're my wife." "That's what divorce means," I explained slowly, as if he were a child and not a full-grown man holding a knife in one hand and a gun in the other. "I'm your wife now, and after we divorce, I won't be your wife anymore."
"I won't allow it,"
he said, as if that simple statement ended the conversation. "I don't care," I said. I turned and crossed the room, keeping distance between myself and Anthony, but trying to draw him away from Amelia. My new position put me too close to Gage's line of sight, but it worked. Anthony turned away from Amelia and dropped the hand with the gun to his side. He closed the knife and slid it back in his pocket. "Let Amelia go," I said.
"No,
Someone will find her after we're gone.
I'm not leaving with you.
Yes, you are. I have a new house, on the side of a mountain, surrounded by trees. You'll be safe and protected there. We can be alone, just you and me.
I've missed you, Sophie. You don't know how I've missed you.
I haven't missed you, I said, trying to rattle him enough to make him forget where he was in relation to the back window. Anthony went on as if I hadn't spoken at all.
You bring me peace. You can't imagine what it's been like the last 2 years, staying away from you, pretending I was dead, surrounded by people who didn't care about me. The stress, it was so intense, so much worse without you. I need you. You're the only one who takes it away. I tried with other women, but none of them were you.
His voice was wistful, almost sweet. I felt the urge to throw up. I brought him peace because he worked out his stress by beating me half to death. A rush of anger displaced my nausea, and I heard myself say, "You don't want a wife. You want a punching bag. You want a victim. You're only happy when you hurt someone weaker than you. I'd say you need help, but you're beyond help. You're a monster." Anthony's handsome face twisted into a snarl, and he took a jerky step closer, not close enough. I moved my foot back and the gun swung up.
"Don't run away from me, you little whore!"
I froze in place. He kept the gun aimed at me and went on, his calm facade cracking as his eyes burned with fury.
"I'm dead not 2 years, and already you're fucking some guy? Letting him touch you. Letting him soil you. You were supposed to be clean, pure. You can't take it all away from me if you're dirty."
I was getting dizzy trying to follow his twisted logic. It kind of made sense. The way he'd dressed me in those virginal nightgowns, barely touched me sexually, insisted I stay away from men, from people, isolated and alone, existing only to serve him. I shuddered at the memory and took a step back without thinking. Anthony's hand jerked to the right and he squeezed the trigger. Chips of concrete flew off the wall. I heard myself scream.
"I said, don't move!"
he shouted, spittle flying from his lips. I'd never seen Anthony so unhinged. Even when he was hitting me, he'd always been in control.
"You're ruining everything," he said,
the hand holding the gun shaking, thrusting forward, punctuating every word.
"I bought us a house. I have money put aside. So much money. I took it all, and then I testified against them. We'll have everything. You just have to come home."
"I'm not coming home," I said quietly. "I'm never going anywhere with you again. You can kill me if you have to, if that's what it takes to get away from you." Anthony went still. The gun dropped to his side.
"You love me,"
he stated flatly, as if it were the only truth he knew. "No.
I hate you."
He looked at me with incomprehension.
"I had to do it, sweetheart," he explained. "It was the only way to get it out of me. And after, I felt so calm. I need that back. I tried with other women, but it didn't work. Only you take the dark away. Only you can give me peace."
I fought the urge to tell him he was crazy. Completely, totally insane. Did he really think I was going to come back to him? "How many people did you hurt in the last 2 years?" I asked. I had to know. I wanted to make him say it out loud, to admit what he was. He cocked his head to the side and studied me for a long moment before answering. Did he know about the wire? If he did, he'd kill us both. Finally, he said,
"I didn't hurt anyone, Sophie. It's never me. It's the darkness."
His voice lowered to a hoarse whisper. "Without you, Sophie, the darkness was hungry." "Then why did you leave me?
I asked, taking a tiny sliding step back, drawing Anthony forward, just a little. Caught in memories of the things he'd done, he barely noticed as we shifted a foot in the wrong direction. Then another.
I thought I could feed it other ways, just for a while, he said in that same hoarse whisper. But it took longer than I planned, and it got to be too much.
Is that why you left the Marshalls? Another small slide back. Almost there. Anthony gave a dismissive shake of his head, seemingly unaware he'd stepped forward to match my careful retreat.
I got away from the safe house when I needed to, but it wasn't the same. Those other women. They weren't you. They couldn't make it happy. Couldn't take it away like you did.
What did you do to them? I asked conversationally, sliding my foot back another step. The same as you did to me?
No, Sophie. No,
he said, tracking me, stepping closer, almost in Gage's line of sight. His voice was entreating, just short of begging. I'd never heard so much emotion from Anthony.
I'd never touch them like I touched you. They weren't clean, weren't pure. They only made the darkness hungrier. It needs you.
I suppressed a shiver. I had no idea what that meant, but I had a terrible feeling he'd done far worse than beat them with his fists and feet. I didn't want to hear any more. I couldn't do it. Couldn't play a game with this monster of a man. Do you want me back? I asked softly. Anthony nodded, slowly. Then come and get me, I invited. I held out my hand as if waiting for him to take it. Anthony carefully placed his gun on the floor and walked toward me, his dark eyes relieved, his face relaxed. Just as his fingertips brushed mine, his body jerked to the side, the sound of a gunshot and breaking glass echoing through the empty room. He hit the floor and rolled, groaning. I heard a voice shout, "Sophie, get out!" I ran for Amelia, pulling frantically at the duct tape binding her to the chair. The voice shouted, "Sophie, move! We've got Amelia covered! Clear the room, now!" I did as I was told, standing and bolting for the door. I heard a shuffle behind me, one shot, then another. A cannonball hit me in the back, and I went down, my shoulder and the side of my head smacking into the concrete floor. I couldn't get air in my lungs. I scrabbled at the floor, sweaty palms slipping, my chest heaving for air, my back burning with pain. Feet rushed by me. Shouts echoed against the concrete walls. Then Gage was there, his hands patting me roughly, yanking up my sweater, tugging at the Velcro of the vest, and smoothing over the unbroken skin of my back. He pulled me into his lap, gathering me close, and pressed his forehead to mine. "Don't you ever fucking do that again, Sophie. Do you hear me? He fucking shot you!" His arms tightened around me, squeezing out what little breath I'd managed to suck in. "The vest?" I whispered.
"Did its job," Gage confirmed. "But you scared the hell out of me. No more confrontations with armed madmen."
I let out a shaky breath. "Agreed." I opened my eyes and peeked over Gage's shoulder to see police officers surrounding a groaning Anthony. In a low voice, Gage said,
"He's going to jail for a long time, Angel. He's not going to bother you again."
I let my eyes slide closed and pressed my face to Gage's chest. "Are you still mad at me?" I asked. His arms went tight again, and he said with a growl,
"I'm fucking pissed at you, Angel. You almost got yourself killed. It's going to take a long time for me to forget him pointing that gun at you."
I had a feeling it would take me a long time to forget that, too. "Do you still love me?" I asked, hoping I already knew the answer.
"Always, Angel. Always."
Epilogue. Part 1. Gage. Sophie handled Anthony Armstrong with a steely nerve I hadn't expected, but the aftermath was messy. Not his arrest. Thanks to Sophie, they had him admitting to murder and repeated spousal abuse on top of the charges of kidnapping. With an irate Mrs. W. as a second witness, at least to the kidnapping, he wasn't getting away with anything. He'd snatched Amelia from the parking lot outside her doctor's office, leaving Mrs. W. tied up in her sedan with a bump on the head, but fortunately no serious injuries. Between her testimony, the camera in the parking lot, and Sophie's wire, there was plenty of evidence to send him away. Anthony went straight to prison, and after his disappearing act on the marshals, the judge wasn't inclined to grant bail. Her divorce was proceeding, complicated slightly by Anthony's uncertain legal status, but it was proceeding. It was the rest that was hard. Neither of us slept much the week after Anthony shot Sophie. Her back was black and blue, and her cheek bruised from her fall. But her body was otherwise undamaged. Her mind, on the other hand, struggled to process everything that had happened. At night, she barely fell asleep before she jerked awake, gasping and crying out in fear and pain. I was there, every time, drying the tears on her cheeks and holding her until she slept again. I had my own bad moments. I'd been doing better since I'd been home, feeling more grounded, less on edge. But seeing Sophie go down after that gunshot had knocked me off balance. I tried to hide it from her. But the few times I fell asleep, I was forced to watch the same scene play out in my mind, only this time Sophie wasn't wearing the vest. This time Amelia was dead. Her throat slit. And Sophie bled out on the floor. It was a good thing we'd scheduled those appointments. We needed them. By the time we went, Sophie was looking forward to hers. I'll admit, I was still reluctant. I didn't want to talk to some stranger about all of the shit swirling around in my head, especially after Sophie's close call. It was too personal. I didn't have a choice. Sophie needed help. She needed sleep. And when I'd suggested I might postpone my own meeting with the therapist, she'd squeezed my hand and said, "I'll go if you go." Fuck. So I went. It wasn't that bad in the end. I was never going to be buddy-buddy with the guy. He asked way too many questions, made me explain too much. But it turned out he'd done two tours himself, mostly in Afghanistan. And he'd seen a lot of shit firsthand. He'd also worked with a lot of guys who had the same problems I did, and he assured me that if I stuck with it, things would get better. Sophie and I both went in twice a week. It wasn't a miracle solution. That first month, Sophie's nightmares didn't improve at all. I think they may have gotten worse, though we were so sleep-deprived it was hard to judge anything. By the end of those first weeks, her skin was so pale I could see the blue veins beneath, and she had dark circles under her eyes. Gradually, something inside her settled, began to ease, and she started sleeping for longer and longer stretches, waking less often with her breath caught in her throat. And when she started to sleep, so did I. By the third month after Anthony's arrest, we were back to where we'd been before the day he'd taken Amelia. Still waking in the night, but mostly chasing off the nightmares with sex. If I had anything to be grateful for in Sophie's horror of a marriage to Anthony Armstrong, it was that he hadn't seemed interested in her sexually. I didn't want to imagine what a man like that could have done to her, the way he could have destroyed her natural sensuality. He'd left that part of her untouched, and it was mine from the beginning. We were in a waiting game. Anthony was doing everything he could to fight the divorce. Out of delusion or spite, we didn't know. It didn't matter. He had money, so was immune to bribery. I'd tried that avenue more than once. The only thing he wanted was Sophie, and she was the one thing he couldn't have. Cooper Sinclair had told us to be patient, His guess was Anthony would never see trial. He'd testified against the Accorsi crime family after stealing from them. He was in solitary confinement for his own protection, but Cooper was positive it wouldn't be enough. He'd violated his agreement with the marshals when he'd taken off, and they'd washed their hands of him. So we waited. I was working full-time at Winters, Inc. by then, slowly moving out from under Aiden's shadow and finding my own place in the company. I still didn't have an official title, but I didn't care. We all owned equal shares in Winters, Inc., which made titles kind of irrelevant. What mattered was that I was home, things were right with Aiden, and I was moving forward with my life. I'd never regret my years in the military, the last 6 months aside. But living in Winters' house and working with Aiden, I finally felt like I could put my demons behind me. I just needed one more thing. A wife. Not just any wife. I needed Sophie. She refused to discuss the future until she was divorced from Anthony. My girl was sweet, but she was stubborn as hell. And old-fashioned. Not only did she refuse to talk to me about getting married, she wouldn't move into my room. She said it was inappropriate for her to move bedrooms, never mind that I slept by her side every night. As long as she was legally married to another man, she wasn't moving in with me. Like I said, stubborn. Finally, 4 months after Anthony Armstrong was arrested for kidnapping Amelia and trying to shoot Sophie, Cooper got word that he'd been found by a guard with his throat slit, despite his seclusion and solitary. It might have been the original locked room mystery, but no one wondered who'd killed him. Testifying against one of the biggest organized crime families in the Southeast after stealing a chunk of their cash was a death sentence. I was only surprised we'd had to wait for so long. I wasn't quite sure how to tell Sophie. I wanted to celebrate, but I knew she wouldn't find that funny, no matter how relieved she'd be that her tormentor was dead. After a detour with Cooper to verify that Anthony wasn't going to come back to life this time, I headed home. I found Sophie in the library with Amelia. I have no idea what they were up to, but from the guilty look on their faces and the scramble to hide what looked like dark fabric in a shopping bag, I guessed I'd find out soon enough. Amelia had dialed back the pranks in the first few months after the kidnapping when Sophie and I were exhausted and jumpy. But now that we were better, she was back to her old tricks. Just a week before, she'd talked Sophie into putting bubble wrap beneath the hall carpets, so they popped with every step. To be honest, no one really minded that one. I even caught Mrs. W. doing a little dance down the hall by the kitchen when she thought no one was looking, each step punctuated by cheerful little pops. Sophie's eyes brightened when she saw me come in. She was off the couch and in my arms before I cleared the threshold, her sweet, sultry scent filling my lungs as I kissed her temple. I wanted to kiss her mouth, but not with Amelia looking on. An avid grin spread across her face. Stepping back, I said, "I need you to sit down, Angel. I have some news." Sophie's eyes darkened, and she bit her lower lip, sitting obediently and waiting, braced for bad news. I hated that the life she'd lived left her assuming that any news was automatically bad. Now that Armstrong was dead, that was finally going to change. I sat beside her and took her hand. Anthony was found dead in his cell this morning. Sophie just stared at me, disbelieving. I went on. Cooper got us in to see the body, Angel. He's dead. It's not a trick.
"He's really dead?"
she whispered, taking a quick, deep breath.
"You're sure?"
"I'm sure," I promised. She still looked unconvinced. I could understand why. The last time someone told her Anthony was dead, he'd knocked on our door 2 years later, very much alive. After going through so much, my Sophie was afraid to hope it was really over. She blinked and took in another quick, deep breath. She was fighting tears. I wished she'd just let go, but she had this idea that crying made her weak. She couldn't have been more wrong. Sophie was one of the strongest women I knew. I pulled my phone from my pocket and brought up the last pictures I'd taken. It was gruesome and totally against regulations, but I'd known what I'd need to set Sophie's mind at ease. Without a word, I handed her my phone, a picture of Anthony's dead body filling the screen. He lay on a metal tray that had been pulled from a wall of similar trays, his skin gray with death, his eyes closed. His neck gaped in an open wound, bloodless and dark, like an obscene grin beneath his chin. Sophie cradled my phone in both hands, staring down at the picture. Amelia leaned over and took a quick look, grimacing and saying, "Couldn't have happened to a better man." I expected Sophie to scold her, but she remained silent, still staring at the picture of her dead husband. She stared so long, I started to wonder if I'd done the right thing in showing her Anthony's body. Just as I was about to reach for my phone, she clicked the screen off and handed it back to me.
"You saw him? You took that picture yourself?"
I knew what she was asking. She'd been fooled once, the last time, by the police. She had to be sure. So did I, which was why I'd asked Cooper to call in a favor and get us a first-hand look at Anthony's dead body. I slid my phone into my pocket and wrapped my arm around Sophie, pulling her tight to my side. I took the picture myself. "He's dead, Sophie. Ice cold and very, very dead. They said he bled out in his cell. He's not coming back this time." Sophie let out a long breath and slumped against me, winding one arm around my waist and holding me tight. It felt like we'd been waiting forever for her to be free. Divorce had been one solution, but this was much better. Finally, Sophie's nightmare was over. For good. "If you two don't have other plans," I said, "I was thinking we could go get a hot chocolate at Annabelle's and stop by to see Charlie and Lucas's project. Charlie said the kitchen is done, and we need to see it before the painters cover it up." Sophie straightened and smiled.
"Sure.
Just let me change." I caught her hand in mine before she could leave. "You okay, Angel?" Sophie gave me an absolutely brilliant smile and said, "I've never been better." As soon as she was out of the room, I turned to Amelia and said, "I have a plan, and I need your help."
Epilogue, Part 2. Sophie.
"Sophie, while you're up, would you get my book from the library?"
Amelia was comfortably ensconced in her bed, covers tucked to her chin. I looked at her suspiciously. She never read in bed. When the lights went out, so did Amelia.
"Which book?"
I challenged.
"The mystery. The one about the knitting club and the murder."
That described any number of mysteries Amelia had read lately, but I thought I knew the one she meant. Helpfully, she said,
"I left it on the table closest to the fireplace."
"You can read it in the morning," I said, wondering what she was up to.
"I want to finish that chapter now. I won't be able to sleep until I know whose body they found behind the yarn shop."
I sighed. I didn't believe her for a second. There was no chance Amelia was going to stay up late to read a book. She loved her sleep too much. But Gage was at a dinner meeting with Aiden, and I was at loose ends, not tired enough to sleep myself, so I might as well do what she asked and let her plan play itself out. "Okay, be right back." I headed into the hall, braced for a surprise. None came. Soft lights illuminated the wood floors and cream walls, and outside in the courtyard, the fountain was still lit, the flowing water gleaming in the darkness. The house was quiet with Mrs. W. at her cottage, Abel in his apartment, and both Gage and Aiden out to dinner. The house needed life. It needed children. Gage had been trying to convince me to have my birth control implant removed. He wanted a family with me. He wanted babies. As much as I love to imagine having Gage's children, his dark hair and serious blue eyes looking back at me from a little boy or girl, I didn't want to take any chances. I wasn't getting pregnant while I was still married to Anthony. It hit me again that Anthony was dead. This time, I was really, truly a widow. Just the thought of Anthony's dead body put a spring in my step. Maybe I was morbid, but after he'd come back from the dead once, nothing comforted me like seeing evidence that he was gone for good. I was free. A light was on in the library. I'd been sure they were all turned off when we left earlier. My steps slowed as I approached the door with caution. Amelia couldn't have planned anything elaborate. I was with her all evening. I'd know if she were up to something big. Still, I entered the library on alert, my eyes scanning the room from one corner to another, looking for anything out of place. The room was empty, the pillows fluffed, blankets folded, and Amelia's book exactly where she'd left it, on the table by the fireplace. As I crossed the room to retrieve the book, thinking I was too suspicious, the fireplace clicked and flickered to life, the flames filling the room with warm light. I jumped a little and spun around, but the room was still empty. Just as I was getting my bearings, the lamp on the far side of the couch turned on, the abrupt glare blinding me for a second. I blinked a few times, and my eyes adjusted, the lamp coming into focus. A shadow marred the white silk shade, a dark circle topped with a fat, dark triangle. A ring. Why was there an oversized ring on the inside of the lamp? I'd understood the bugs, those that even scared me a little, and I'd been the one to tape them in place. But a ring? I walked closer, curious. The ring was the diameter of a dinner plate, and a little lopsided. I was starting to doubt Amelia was behind this. She was a stickler for perfection in her pranks, and she could cut a better circle than that. Walking closer, I peered beneath the shade, reaching inside to take down the silhouette of the ring. A sparkle caught my eye, and I froze. Tied to the inside of the shade, dangling in front of the light, was a ring. A diamond ring. My hands shaking a little, I tugged on the thread securing the ring, and it tumbled into my hand, the stone catching fire in the light from the bulb. I turned it over, studying the simple gold band and the large, brilliant diamond. "It was my mother's," Gage said from across the room. Startled, my hand closed over the ring, and I looked up to see him in the hidden doorway, watching me. "The ring," he said, clarifying. "It was my mother's. My father gave it to her a few months after they started dating. He always said he knew the moment he saw her that she was it for him. I never really knew what he meant until the night I met you. I held you in my arms, and I knew I never wanted to let you go." I stared at Gage in shock, my mouth hanging open, the ring clutched tightly in my hand. The diamond cut into my palm. But I didn't care. I was never letting go, not of the ring, and not of Gage. "I didn't want you to," I admitted. "I knew I should, knew I could lose my job, but I didn't care. You were in my heart from the beginning." Gage crossed the room and took my hand, gently pulling my fingers back from the ring. Taking it, he turned my hand over and said, "Sophie, will you marry me? I want to have a life with you, a family. I want to spend the rest of my life making you happy."
"Yes," I whispered. "Yes, I'll marry you." A tear streaked down my cheek as he slid the ring on my finger, and I barely registered Gage nodding to someone at the door. Turning, I caught a flash of Amelia's satisfied smile and Aiden's grin before the door shut, and we were alone. "You got Amelia to help you prank me with a ring?" I asked, looking between Gage's face to the diamond sparkling on my hand. The ring was a simple solitaire, but it wasn't plain. The diamond was too big, had too much fire,
to ever be plain. It was perfect, mostly because it came from Gage.
It seemed fitting,
Gage said, drawing me into his arms.